Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin our program by talking with you about prostate cancer. Talk a bit about detection and treatment. We certainly want to zero in on some research that our guest has been involved in. Dr. Doug McNeil is in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and is associated with the UW Carbone Cancer Center. And he's worked on a new vaccine against prostate cancer. And I certainly want to talk with him about that. And we would love to take your questions and comments as we move along today. So you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And Dr. Doug McNeil, thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. How common is prostate cancer in the U.S.?
It's actually the most commonly diagnosed cancer in the United States.
Oh.
So currently over 200,000 men are diagnosed annually.
So, and a large number of people die from it every year, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Currently estimating over 30,000 deaths from prostate cancer. And as such, it's the second leading cause of death among men from cancer.
And are there, is this a trend up, down, about the same?
So actually, the death rate has been decreasing. We don't have a good explanation for this. It's been surmised that this might in part be due to early detection and screening that was instituted about 20 years ago. But there has been a general trend in a decrease in the death from prostate cancer. On the other hand, the incidence rate initially increased in about the mid-1980s as PSA screening was rolling out, and so there were a large number of cases that were diagnosed very early. That trend is starting back up again, and that's probably because our population's aging, with the baby boomers aging, and so as the population ages, the incidence rate's starting to increase again.
And so it's cancer, prostate cancer. Do we know what kind of causes it, or what?
To be honest, we don't know what causes it. There have been some associations. There's a thought that there may be something diet or in our environment or our lifestyle that affects it. We know that the life-threatening types of prostate cancer tend to be more common in Western countries, but we don't know the exact causes.
We don't know really why. Just know that it's there. And we have callers, and you mentioned PSA tests, and Paul in Whitewater, I think, has something that relates to that. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Paul in Whitewater, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I just had a radical prostatectomy 2 weeks ago, and this was the result of my taking a PSA test in August and finding that I had an unacceptably high level, which was 25 at the time. The last time I'd had a PSA test was 2007, and it was 3 at that time. Mm-hmm. What I did incorrectly was stop the PSA test and wait several years until we did one more time. In between, we did digital rectal exams. Had I not taken the PSA test this past August, I would have come down with a much more serious case and possibly have passed away with prostate cancer. As it was, the cancer was caught when it was entirely within the margins of the prostate and had not metastasized into neighboring organs. So I count myself extremely lucky. My comment relates to the recent government decision or governmental panel decision not to recommend PSA tests in healthy men. I strongly recommend against that, because had we gone with a digital rectal examination from 2007 and beyond, I would have come down with a case from which I could not survive. And that's my comment.
Mm-hmm.
So, Paul, first, congratulations to you in getting this detected and treated. And I guess I would comment that I'm a medical oncologist, and so I end up seeing patients with typically more advanced prostate cancer. And Your story is not uncommon, and certainly people who've had prostate cancer are strong advocates of screening. The recommendation from the U.S. Preventive Health Task Force came out of one study from the United States that really hasn't quite been completed. And so one might view those recommendations as perhaps a bit premature, and in contrast to a screening study that was done in Europe with a much larger population of patients. I think in general, at least from the medical oncology perspective, wise screening and screening for individuals at particular risk certainly makes sense at this point. And I think really begs the question that we need better tests, and certainly that's an avid area of research at the University of Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Yeah. So maybe you can talk a little bit more about, given your position, that you're in Division of Hematology, and you're dealing with more advanced cases than you are detecting on that end of things.
Sure. And I might also comment that when I started my training, about 15, 20 years ago, the leading cause for people seeking medical attention with prostate cancer was that they were diagnosed with metastatic disease. So they came in with symptoms from the cancer. And at that point, and for many of those men, it was pretty far along and not in a curative situation. Given the institution of screening, we have seen a migration towards people are diagnosed with much earlier stage disease. And so I think that the previous caller fits into that scenario where it can be detected earlier. And so we've definitely seen that prostate cancer can be identified much earlier in the course of disease without symptoms by screening.
Thomas in Iowa County, it's on to you now. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. I'd like to weigh in on this. I wish people would get their PSA taken, because in 2007, I was 65, screened for the first time. My PSA was 160.
Wow.
Of course, I thought I was, a goner. My Gleason score, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was very high, and the cytology report suggested an aggressive cancer. I wanted surgery, but nobody wanted to do it. They said it would just be too radical. I went to the Carbone Center. They didn't want to do it. I went up to Mayo because I was, typically panicked, and I wanted surgery. I got talked into tomographic radiation. I'm extremely pleased that I was, because my PSA is now 0.3 and seems to be staying there. So I guess I'd like to know your take on that. I think that probably saved my life. But had I not been screened, it had moved into the capsule around my prostate, so it would have probably metastasized shortly. What do you think?
We look at a few features before recommending different kinds of treatments or considering different kinds of treatments for prostate cancer. We look at the level of the PSA, the Gleason score, or the pathological score for how aggressive it looks under the microscope, and other medical conditions that might impact people's lifespan, frankly. And in general, I think with a PSA level that high, there's a concern that the disease may have already spread outside of the area of the prostate. The other thing to, I guess, be aware of is that even in men in whom we don't detect any evidence of prostate cancer outside of the area of the prostate and who undergo surgery or radiation therapy with the intent of curing the disease, even in that scenario, the unfortunate story with prostate cancer is about a third of men will have the disease recur at some point in their lives. And that's in particular what we're focused on in the medical oncology perspective of, can we reduce that number and have people avoid having the disease come back, and in particular why we're interested in vaccines. But that's the real challenge with prostate cancer, is once the disease comes back.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call as well. And so why, when it comes back, it's harder to treat. Is that correct, or is it?
Typically, if prostate cancer comes back, and it's not really the case that it comes back, it's this that
it was always there
and has been growing in the background. And typically in that scenario, it will be in areas of lymph nodes in the back of the abdomen, in the pelvis area, or in the bones. yes, that tends to be, we have treatments for that. The initial treatment is typically to use treatments that lower testosterone, castration surgery, or medical treatments that accomplish the same thing. And so that's typically what we do, but that's not a curable disease typically.
Somebody who's wondering, what is the prostate? What does it do?
The prostate is a gland that sits at the base of the bladder and produces seminal fluid.
Okay. We have a number of callers here. Ray in Wausau, we turn to you next. Hi, Ray.
Hi. I had an interesting experience with prostate cancer, too. I had a 2.8 that was about 3 years ago. I didn't get it checked for a while. All of a sudden, I went in, and it was 6.5. And then within a month or two, it went up to 10.5. And so my medical doctor, fortunately, just looked at me and says, you need to do something about this now. So I had the choice between surgery, radiation, and chirotherapy, where they freeze it. I chose the freezing, and I had less side effects than some other types of therapies that people had, and I'm doing very well. But like I said, I'm in remission, and who knows what can happen. I mean, one thing I have seen, I have known a lot of people who have had prostate cancers. They'd had different types of therapies done with them. But I'll tell you this, I support the PSA. I'm a prime example of that. If I would have gotten there sooner, I may have been able to have the seeds implantation therapy, you know, and because I didn't go every year, I think I made a mistake with that. So I support the PSA 1,000%. I do. Mm.
Well, you're kind of preaching to the choir, and but that's very helpful information. And certainly, in my practice, I see people who've had prostate cancer and in many cases are grateful that they were able to detect it early.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. How valid is the new PCA3 test? This is from John, an email. Do we have any idea of how valid that is in Europe? That test is in Europe, PCA3 versus PSA. This person's had an increasing PSA for years and three biopsies, finally pushed to have the new PCA3 test to avoid another biopsy. The number came back negative and very low. Can I finally breathe a sigh of relief? And that's not probably something...
There are a number of other kinds of tests being evaluated, there are other urine-based screening tests being evaluated. There are other serum-based markers that are being evaluated, like PSA. And so I think we don't have enough information really to evaluate all of these directly yet.
And we will. I want to talk with Dr. Doug McNeil about his work and the work that he's doing with vaccines, and I know we have some questions about vaccines coming up as well. Dr. Doug McNeil is in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, associated with the UW Carbone Cancer Center. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about detection and treatment of prostate cancer today with Dr. Doug McNeil from the UW Division of Hematology Oncology at the School of Medicine and Public Health and the Carbone Cancer Center. Great to have him along, and thanks for listening in today. And join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. And Dr. McNeil, maybe you can talk a little bit. Vaccines came up here. I know we have some questions relating to vaccines, but talk about your work. You're working on a new vaccine again to sort of fight prostate cancer, if I'm not mistaken. Tell us about that. How does it work?
So,
give us the background and first. And
sure. The general idea with anti-tumor vaccines as treatments for cancer, most people think of vaccines as preventative strategies. And in general, this is where we hope to be in 10 to 20 years of using vaccines to prevent the occurrence of cancer. But right now, as anti-cancer therapies, our goal is to basically elicit a tissue rejection response, if you will. So sort of turn the immune system into a weapon against the cancer. So in the case of prostate cancer, our goal is in people who have early stage, who've had prostate cancer and have been treated for prostate cancer, if the disease is starting to recur, the first thing that we see is the PSA blood tests start to rise. And that usually precedes any detection of the cancer by scans. And so in that setting, we know that those people eventually, if left untreated, will develop cancer somewhere at some point. So our goal at that point is to try to, if you will, create a tissue rejection response to try to reject any prostate cancer cells. So we've spent a number of years looking at what might be targets for vaccines, what might people with prostate cancer already recognize made by the prostate immunologically that we could then use to develop vaccines. And then we've been focusing on a few of these as targets or what we call antigens to target by means of vaccines. One of these is a protein called prostatic acid phosphatase, which turns out is the target of a vaccine that was approved a year and a half ago by FDA as a treatment called Provenge or Cipollucel T. We've been looking at this as a target using a bit simpler means of targeting it, using a DNA made by bacteria as a means of targeting this particular protein.
Mm. And so, in other words, it's maybe possible at some point to give somebody a shot and...
Or several shots.
Right.
That's the idea. And the idea is basically to use a vaccine to train the immune system to recognize a protein made by the prostate as something bad or foreign and to reject. So, the goal is to sort of educate the immune system, if you will, to recognize the cancer as something to be rejected or targeted and destroyed.
Hmm. Susan in Summit, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have a brother that has prostate cancer, and it was detected with the PSA test, and he went from a very low level to over 100. And his is metastatic. But my question to you is the PSA test any use in terms of predicting how bad the cancer is, or is it just a screening tool? Because he keeps calling me and saying, my PSA level is this. Well, we already know it's metastatic, and he's being treated with different things, but I was just wondering if the PSA still makes a difference.
That's a great question, and most of the controversy that's come up about PSA screening has been in people who've not been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Once people have prostate cancer and they've been treated, the test is still very useful for monitoring the course of the disease. And the absolute PSA number is not as important as or probably not as important as trends in a particular individual, meaning that some people can have very high PSA levels and not have detectable disease other than by the PSA, meaning we don't see it on scans. And other people can have a very low PSA and still have a large burden of disease. But we look at the trends of the PSA for determining whether some treatments are working or not.
Mm. I guess, can I have a follow-up?
Sure.
Yes, he's had several bouts of chemotherapy. He's had radiation therapy. He's had surgery. He's several things. And he'll call me and say, well, the PSA is back up again. The PSA is down. So if the PSA is going back up, then once again, the treatment isn't working, basically.
Probably is the best answer to that. We look at a few things in people with metastatic disease. We look at the PSA. We look at how they're doing clinically, and we look at scans, bone scans and CT scans to then see whether or not by that method things are improving or not improving.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Rick in Gays Mills, it's your turn. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling because your guest is giving too much short shrift from the American Preventive Services Task Force recommendation for no PSA screening in healthy men. PSA was originally developed to follow people who'd already had prostate cancer diagnosed. It was not devised as a screening test. And there are no good studies, and the Preventive Services Task Force said this in their recommendation. There are no studies that show that there's any lengthening of lifespan with men who have been subjected to diagnostic procedures and therapies as a result of PSAs. And what they're not talking about, what you're not talking about, is the amazing amount of morbidity, meaning death, excuse me, morbidity, meaning side effects, bad ones, such as that occur with the biopsies or with the interventions, where you're going to have incontinence, can't hold on to your urine, where you're going to have impotence, can't get an erection for the rest of your life. They cited the amazing amount of these and no lengthening of lifespan in people who have had these testing and procedures done. So I think you're giving their recommendations very short shrift. They realized the firestorm they were going to create when they made this recommendation. Lastly, the anecdotes of people you've had on with call-ins earlier, those are anecdotes. We can't do decent clinical practice decisions by anecdote. We have to do it based on studies. So I think you need to revisit their recommendations, which say no routine PSA screening in healthy males, period.
So there have been two large prospective screening trials, one in the United States, which was about 70,000 men, and one that was conducted in Europe, which was about 174,000 men. The study in Europe was actually positive, showing a benefit in survival. Both of these studies are criticized. They both have problems, and neither one have really followed people out for a long period of time. The U.S. Preventive Health Task Force recommendation was based on data that did not show a survival benefit from PSA screening, but that was after 10 years, and not all of the only about 70% of the people had been followed for 10 years. We know that mortality from prostate cancer can occur over a 15-year period, and even in people, there have been studies looking at surgery versus no surgery, and European studies have shown that after 15 years of follow-up, there is a benefit for people having surgery. So it's a difficult question, and the caller raises very important things and a lot of the concerns. The benefit of a screening test is whether or not it changes survival. I would say right now the studies are suboptimal. We have two large studies, one in the U.S. and one in Europe, that actually showed different results. And the caller raises an important point that that over-screening and over-treatment does, and treating people who don't need it, because there are people who probably do not need treatment, raises concerns about risks from over-treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Am I still there?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, your comment about the European study, they were very equivocal and felt they could really not say that there was any true benefit. They also hedged their bets on whether there might be any longevity. The Preventive Services Task Force weighed this against the enormous amount of morbidity. Men who will no longer get erections, who cannot hold on to their urine, that's the result of these interventions. I think what you just said, which is most important, is over-treatment. We get carried away. There's also been a firestorm over their recommendations about not doing as much mammography as has been recommended, or in the age groups before. So I think their recommendation is valid and important and safe at this point.
Hmm. There you go. We have appreciate your call, Rick, very much, and I appreciate the comments that you made. I want to give others a chance to join in, so I'm going to turn to Eric in Appleton. Eric, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, great discussion. Yeah, I have several brothers who have had prostate cancer, so I'm worried about it myself. My question was the risks of doing the biopsies. It seems like, you know, given the fact that, you know, a big percentage of us men in our, you know, 50s have some sort of slow-growing prostate cancer, you know, poking it with a stick and taking, you know, 10 or 12 cores, opening up, you know, the prostate, you know, capsule almost increases the risk of it metastasizing.
It's a great question, but we don't really have any evidence that happens. But it's an interesting idea.
Yeah. So what happens when you actually do one of these? I mean, what's involved in one of these treatments?
So I think what he's raising is that people that are undergoing screening, if they have an elevated PSA blood test, and if they have something palpable that the doctor can feel on physical exam, They would have a biopsy that's usually guided by ultrasound, in which a needle is placed into the prostate to obtain tissue that the pathologist can then look at under the microscope. So his concern is that does that put people at risk by seeding the cancer into the bloodstream, for example. We don't have any evidence of that, and not really a good way around it, because there's not one has to look at it under the microscope in order to test.
Jim in Holland, Wisconsin, it's on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. About 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. I had a PSA that was running around 3, 3.5, and all of a sudden, in about 6 months, it took a jump to like about 5, 5.5. So they did a biopsy. They couldn't feel anything with a digital exam. But the biopsies proved that I had a cancer in the prostate. Gleason score was about 8 at the time. So they gave me a shot of a Lupron. And then about 6 months later, they started with focused beam radiation. And I also had two treatments of high radiation, where they inserted needles right into the prostate, into the cancer area. And as of this time right now, it's about 3 years later, my PSA is down to about 0.15. And I think if it wouldn't have been for the prostate screening, I would probably be sitting there pushing up daisies about now. So I want to pass my experience along.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we've, that's probably a third or fourth caller. I mean, it is anecdotal, but when it's you, it's when it happens to you. I mean, I guess it's
yes, and at this point, I think what it calls attention to is that it's still reasonable to talk to your doctor. I mean, there probably are people for whom it's not reasonable to engage in screening for a variety of reasons, based on age or other medical conditions, where what are you going to do with this information if you have it? But in particular, for people with at high risk based on family histories, or then having that information then at least provides them the ability to work with it.
Okay. And we had sort of relating to the needle biopsies again. I just want to go back to that, because caller Michael in Milwaukee had a 4.4 PSA reading, was an increase for him. They did a 12 needle biopsy on him. Wondered why so many, and does that mean there's more cause for worry?
The reason for doing multiple core biopsies is to sample different areas of the prostate and their two lobes of the prostate. And so it's generally recommended to have multiple cores to have good sampling from different areas of the prostate.
Okay.
Because while they use ultrasound to kind of guide where to go for that, it isn't foolproof. And so it's important to kind of sample. And that also gives some prognostic information if the cancer is detected in multiple areas, and it gives us also an idea of how much of the gland is involved.
Here's another kind of relating an email from Reagan in Madison. Her 30-year-old husband, grandfather and father both had prostate cancer, wondering if he should start getting screened now at the age of 30.
In general, the recommendations from the American Urological Association and the American Cancer Society have been that patients with large family histories, African Americans who tend to have more aggressive and earlier disease, to consider starting to screen at the age of 40, and for others to consider to begin screening at 50. And I say these have been the past recommendations for age-appropriate screening.
Okay, and for those who should be getting screening, then is that a once-a-year thing, or is it?
Well, for those that elect to do it, and again, I would caution that I think this is a good discussion to have with a person's primary physician. Again, because of the recommendations recently from the U.S. Preventative Health task force. There may be physicians who prefer not to, or mm-hmm. or counsel patients that it's not a good idea to do it. So I think this is a discussion that people should be having with their primary physician.
Gotcha. Charles in Wausau, it is your turn. Hi, Charles. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hello. My question, I'm a family physician, and I'd like the doctor to comment on the fact that even with all our scoring criteria, we can't tell which tumors would have been totally asymptomatic and the body kept them in check versus the ones that would be aggressive. And that fact is possibly why the large studies don't show any benefit to PSA screening.
Hmm.
That's a good question. And I think the last 20 years have led to a lot of learning. I think we recognize now that an individual tumor biopsy out of 12 cores that might have had a very small level of involvement and a very low Gleason score are probably benign tumors or that we can best leave alone. And there's much more of a movement now to look at watchful waiting kinds of approaches with people with cancers that are identified that have that kind of appearance. I think that's very different than tumors that appear in multiple biopsies, have a much higher pathological score, that look much more aggressive under the microscope. All of these things need to be incorporated into prospective trials to assess, but will certainly be important in making those decisions about who to treat and who not to treat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And Paul in Whitewater, on to you. Hi, Paul.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I was the first to call today, and I've been listening to the program ever since. The caller who called and defended the national recommendation from the treatment task force, and did so quite vociferously, I was very surprised about that, he is completely ignoring in his discussion the importance of life, that is continuing to live, versus the so-called side effects of prostate cancer. My prostate cancer had a Gleason score of 3 plus 4 equals 7, which meant it was a moderately aggressive cancer. It was found in 60% of the prostate. It was diffuse. It was not concentrated at the time of the original biopsy, but on pathological examination, there was a knot in one of the nodes of the prostate that would have broken out and metastasized in at least a year or two from now and spread the cancer rather widely. What I look upon the PSA test as is a necessary gateway to further examination.
What do you think?
It's a challenging one. We're hearing from people who've been on the other side of screening and have had positive results as a result.
Let's talk about your work a bit here again, and I'm kind of interested in this in the vaccine, and maybe talk a bit more about what you're doing. How's this process, or how's this research going, and is there sort of a light at the end of the tunnel as to when you're going to have findings that will be?
Sure. So, again, we've been interested in what might be good targets for vaccines and have been looking at one particular protein called prostatic acid phosphatase, which is just a protein made by prostate cells. And we've been investigating this as a target for vaccines using DNA made by bacteria that we basically just put under the skin in the form of a vaccine. So the goal is then to generate immune cells, we call T cells, that recognize this as something bad, and cells making this PAP protein, which are only prostate cells.
Oh.
So the idea is to get T cells that then recognize these prostate cells as something bad and reject them. So we've completed a clinical trial here at the University of Wisconsin in people with PSA recurrent disease, and we found that vaccination is safe and that About half of patients got immune responses that we were looking for.
Great.
And so this research is moving forward. We're doing now a larger study in this same group of people here and at University of California, San Francisco, to ask whether or not immunization will delay the time to the development of metastases. We have another study in people with a little bit later stage of cancer where we're asking about what is the right schedule to immunize people. Mm-hmm. Sort of interestingly, while we've been immunizing people over the last 100 years for infectious diseases, you'll notice that some vaccines we give every 10 years, some we give
right.
once for life, and we really don't have good answers as to how often we need to how many times and what's the best means of immunizing
yeah.
people to maintain lifelong immunity. So these are the kinds of questions that we're asking in clinical trials.
So and in terms of the trials themselves, how do you take the patients that you have at UW, or is it?
Correct. At least so these are research trials. So patients
yeah.
that are seen in our clinics or who are referred in are mm-hmm. Given information, and if they elect to proceed, they will.
they have the option to And so the trials that you're working on, these trials are, when do you expect them to be completed?
We are, we have a trial where some people are getting vaccine and some people are getting just the adjuvant to the vaccine or not vaccine. And we're asking the question about whether vaccine versus essentially placebo will delay the time to the development of metastases. And we're expecting to complete that and or have the final answer from that trial in about 3 years.
Okay, so it's ways out yet, but hey, we're closer than we were a year ago.
That's right.
I guess we can put it that way. And Dr. McNeil, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today and talking about prostate cancer. It's really something that obviously, there's a lot of feeling out there about it, and there's a lot of worry about it, and there's apparently a fair amount of argument about which ways that we should go in its treatment. So I thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Doug McNeil is in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, associated with the Carbone Cancer Center. Well, we've been talking about physical health and combating cancer. Now we're going to look at physical differences in the brains and in the brains of psychopaths. Two UW researchers compared brain scans of criminals diagnosed as psychopaths to those of non-psychopaths, and they found some really fascinating differences. And I hope you'll stay tuned. It's going to be an intriguing conversation coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.